evening, and welcome to Outsources, a weekly KGNU program that provides you with content by and for queer communities in Colorado. I'm your host, Sean Kenny, and tonight we find ourselves in the aftermath of yet another horrific mass shooting in Colorado. On Saturday evening, a shooter targeted Club Q in Colorado Springs, which has been a frightening reminder that queer and trans people continue to be targets, and that queer bars, meant to be havens where our communities can gather, can also be sites of harassment and danger. I want to first begin tonight's episode with these words from Outsources Collective member Stoney Burtz, who is a Colorado Springs resident and Southern Colorado field organizer for One Colorado.
Hey, friends and family. It's Stoney. I'm addressing you today in light of recent events here in Colorado Springs regarding the Club Q shooting and all of our friends and family who have been affected by this terrible tragedy. Like many of you, I find myself in a place where I've offered many words today, but I still find myself speechless and wondering what's next, especially now we know the work truly begins and ramps up for the folks who've been working towards stopping these senseless acts of violence from continuing. I mentioned in a statement before that, you know, it's up to us to craft what tomorrow looks like, even in times where it feels like tomorrow's not possible. It's up to us to make tomorrow possible. And even more so at this time, I would just urge everybody to lean in to community, to lean into each other and be reminded and take solace in the fact that we are our greatest resource. We are the experts of what it is that we need and what it is that we do not need. And certainly it is high time that we have more community and more than just us invested in making spaces safe and keeping them safe. And with that, I would just offer words of kindness. Be kindness to yourself, kindness towards others, and love on yourself and love on your loved ones tonight and today and the day after, and continue to do that while we see our way through this. You are loved.
Building from Stoney's words that we are our greatest resource, we're dedicating tonight's show to thinking through how we can better understand the effects of these events on LGBTQ people and communities, and how we can foreground care for ourselves and one another as we move forward. For some insights and answers, we revisit an interview conducted by Dr. Janice Bohan with Dr. Glenda Russell, who has spent more than two decades doing research, writing, consulting, and therapy around precisely these questions. This conversation was recorded in 2016 in the aftermath of the Pulse nightclub shooting in Orlando, though the content is sadly still relevant 6 years later. I also reached back out to Dr. Russell yesterday evening after the Club Q shooting to get her thoughts on the current context in which the shooting occurred, and we'll hear those comments at the end of tonight's show.
Can you talk a little bit about how many people, myself included, yesterday were feeling in this sort of daze and confusion about what had happened and what it means and how to make meaning from an event like that, how to understand it and how to understand what it does to us. Can you talk a little bit about this? What is the impact of this kind of thing on folks?
Well, these kinds of events obviously are in many ways designed to disrupt people's normal functioning, to disrupt their sense of safety, and those are among the consequences that you're likely to see from events of this sort. You know, when we think about people being exposed to a criminal act of some kind, we know that that is a difficult experience, and I'm not at all minimizing it. That can be really scary. It can feel incredibly intrusive. It can evoke feelings of non-safety. When a when an event is directed at people, when a crime is directed at people for who they are, it carries all of those consequences, plus the added consequence of it reverberates in the entire community. It is likely to run through other people who are members of that community. They feel scared. They feel sad. They feel outrage. They feel anger. They feel sadness. You know, it is a community event that is experienced in a very personal way. Okay. And so in having that be a part of this, then we know that underneath all of this is anti-LGBT bias. Call it homophobia, transphobia, biphobia, sexual prejudice, call it whatever you want. It is a virulent form of prejudice that this individual was engaging in and enacting. And he did that in an atmosphere where there's still plenty of anti-LGBT bias all over the place. You know, it's really easy. It was very easy. Almost a year ago, we had the U.S. Supreme Court announce that, you know, basically marriage equality was now the law of the land.
In fact, it was almost exactly.
It was almost exactly. And some people who thought that was a brass ring sort of were thinking we had made it. It was so predictable. In fact, I started a file then called Backlash. It's called Post-Same-Sex Marriage Backlash because I knew the backlash would happen. Now, whether we can tie the specifics of this particular event to the backlash, I don't know. But it is part of a whole bunch of things that have been happening in the past year. The targeting of trans people, especially in bathroom, around bathroom issues. The legislative stuff, the call for religious exemptions to all kinds of laws. The backlash is here, and this may be part of the backlash. So those are the... You know, beyond that, we don't know what meaning to make of this. We don't know much about the details.
Right. There's so many variables we don't know about and don't know what role they played. Part of what's so complex about this is how many variables there are. I'd like to talk some more about that, but I want to back up just for a second about it's really striking, this notion about what hate crimes do, that they are effectively a crime against a whole group of people, even if they target even potentially an individual specifically for identity, and certainly 50 individuals for their identity. It has the awful impact that a crime has for those people and for a whole lot of other people who are affected. And then the notion of this backlash thing, and I was struck today in something I read, I can't remember exactly where it was, but something about, was this made more awful, do you think? I know you don't have a firm answer to this, but it's an interesting thought. Made more awful because we thought we were safe. We thought we'd gotten so far. We thought we were accepted. We thought, you know, that we were the good kids on the block, and we were now part of the mainstream. And then to have this happen is sort of like, wait a minute, that wasn't supposed to be us.
One of the things I say to people in the LGBT community, and it's true of people who are in other marginalized communities, is that the bias that's against us is not rational. We can be going along and our life seems very fine and things seem very, very safe. And that can happen for a good long period of time. And then out of nowhere, with no warning, somebody can be homophobic, sexist, racist, xenophobic, whatever it is. That's part of what is emotionally and psychologically very trying about being a member of a target group. You don't know when it's coming up, and you really can't totally let down your guard anywhere. Lin-Manuel Miranda won a whole bunch of Tony Awards last night and did a sonnet that was really beautiful. And one of the things he said in the middle of it that was so perfect for this event, and he was, in fact, saying it for this event in Orlando, he said that nothing is promised, not one day. And ultimately, I think that those of us who are in marginalized communities have the sense somewhere in us, we're not always aware of it, but we have the sense somewhere in us of our own existential vulnerability. It can come out of nowhere, mm-hmm. and mm-hmm. it did come out of nowhere mm-hmm. in Orlando.
Then it strikes harder when we're reminded that, no, the homophobia is still there. It's there in a way we hadn't known or hadn't anticipated.
Yeah, because we never can anticipate it effectively. In thinking about, though, your question, Janice, about, you know, what meaning, I think there are a couple of things that I want to say in addition to what I've already said, the basic stuff. But I think one of the things that happens with situations like this is when any marginalized group is targeted, you get a whole bunch of other stuff. We know that there's a high correlation between racism, homophobia, sexism, xenophobia, anti-Semitism, et cetera, et cetera. And that's part of what we're seeing get played out. But a friend of mine, a psychologist named Bev Green, said something to me in an email today, which I think is so perfect. She said, you know, when somebody goes and takes aim at the LGBTQ community, they're going to get a whole lot of people because a whole lot of people from all communities are in the LGBT community. And that's a part of the lesson in for our community in this event. One other thing about meaning making, there's been a lot of talk about the shooter being mentally ill, having a mental diagnosis, that kind of thing. I don't know anything about that, obviously, directly, but I do know this, and it's an important statement to make, that people with diagnosable mental illnesses are no more likely to hurt you or me than anybody else walking around the planet, unless they are doing substances. And in fact, if you are not mentally ill and you're doing substances, you're also likely to use poor judgment. So this is the for those who want to reduce this to a mental illness, that is a false reduction. It doesn't work because that's not typical of people with mental illnesses. This is a political event. It is not a mental illness event. And I'm prepared as a psychologist who's licensed in the state of Colorado to make that claim.
I'm struck as you're talking about partly about the things it isn't and the ways we look to attribute some kind of cause, if you will, some kind of meaning that would say, oh, this is what that was. It smacks a little bit of denial. Like, if we know what it is, if we could get all the mentally ill people off the street or all the immigrants out of the country, build a wall, or just a random thought, if we could do those things, then we would be completely safe. And that disregards what you said before about nothing is guaranteed. It also kind of flies in the face of our growing political awareness that these things are always around. And in fact, if it isn't our community, it's somebody else. And as Bev Green said, that makes it our community. Whoever it is that's targeted,
right,
is all of us.
That's right. I think we all, you know, we do want to be safe. Everybody wants to be safe. Everybody wants to have an answer. And they want the answer to be as far away from them as it can possibly be. And so we go after people's religion. We go after people's mental health. And we go after a million things. Anybody who uses this as a basis for Islamophobia is either ignorant of the facts of this event and of other kinds of events of this sort, or they are doing an intentional number for political gain. There's nothing in this case that suggests that. I mean, you know, just on the basis of sheer numbers, the majority of murders committed in this country are committed by Christians. That's a silly statement, and it's no less silly to say that this guy committed a murder and he was a Muslim, and that has something to do with the murder that he committed. We don't know why he committed this murder. Ultimately, we know it's anti-LGBT bias.
If you're just joining us, you're listening to Outsources on KGNU. I'm your host, Sean Kenny, and we're listening to an interview between Dr. Janice Bohan and Dr. Glenda Russell, which was recorded in 2016 after the Pulse nightclub shooting in Orlando. Thus far, you've heard Dr. Russell speak on the various effects of hate crimes and violence committed against marginalized communities like the one that occurred this past weekend at Club Q. Now the conversation turns to what actions we can take individually and collectively to care for one another.
And we are just about to move to my favorite part of this discussion, which is, what do these things do to us, and even more importantly, what can we do about it? How do we manage the stress, if you will? How do we get resilient, stay resilient? How can we move forward in a positive way?
Chances are excellent that any reaction that you've had to this in the last 24, 36 hours, whatever it's been, has been normal. And that's a really important statement. If you're sad, if you're angry, if you're scared, if you are overwhelmed, if you find yourself crying for no reason, all of those are normal responses to a very abnormal situation. And they're not to be worried about. They're not post-traumatic stress disorder. It is how people feel when horrible things happen in their midst. And we would have to be attenuating our own ability to feel to not have any reactions to this. It is really fine to have these reactions. It is fine to do the things that people do when they have difficult reactions like this, and that is go get a hug, go feel safe, go do something that is truly comforting to you, stay in the queer community, talk with people, and do the things that we do to take care of ourselves in general.
I know that this has been the bulk. I know you do very many things, but a large part of your research over 2 decades. And one of the things that has been striking about that is the number of groups, organizations that have invited you to speak because you know some stuff about what do we do, how do we move forward, what do communities and individuals specifically. Tell me what to do. If I'm feeling awful, what kind of things can I do in the next week,
you know,
that will help?
Part of what we do is what we do whenever there's any crisis. And those things are really simple. We make sure we eat. We make sure we sleep as much as we need to. We exercise. We talk to people. We resist the tendency to isolate ourselves. We get some exercise, even though we don't necessarily feel like going out and getting some exercise. Those are things that anybody facing any crisis anytime should think about doing. And sometimes those are really useful things to have in your head because you can do those without thinking too much. You know those are good things to do. Your mother told you to do that when you were 6 or something like that. The bigger thing to do, the more specific thing to do when we're facing a crisis like this is to cultivate what I came up in my research with and labeled a movement perspective. And a movement perspective understands that this is a moment, it's a terrible moment, but it is not going to eclipse the movement for social justice in this country or indeed in the world. We are part of a movement. It has a history. Learn about that history. This is a good time to read a book on queer history. It is a movement that has a future. And if you doubt that, watch some of the amazing, powerful things that are being done by LGBTQ youth right now. Think about yourself in that movement. It can hold us because, in fact, it does hold us. We are a community that extends across time. We extend across place. I was so struck last night. I was at a vigil, and I was struck by the fact that at that moment, all over this country, there were vigils going on. People were thinking the same kinds of things, feeling the same kinds of things, and energizing themselves with the same determination to continue the work for social justice. That means we are part of something much bigger than ourselves, and that is exactly the most empowering thing that we can be thinking about at this time. And there's no better time to think of that.
Although it's hard at this moment when it feels so awful to think, yeah, but this will go away. The larger perspective, you're saying, if you can keep that in mind, that doesn't take away how awful it feels.
That's right. And one of the ways to keep it in mind is to do something, be active. We've known from thousands of studies, literally, that active coping is better than passive coping. So that means do some things. One of the things that I recommend people do, as I said, is go express your sadness, your anger. Find people who care about you, who are willing to listen to some of that. That's important. But also get together and do things that are fun. In addition, send money to your local community center. Volunteer with a community organization. Attend Pride Parade this weekend. Do not be afraid. Do not move back into the closet. Go to a queer choral concert. Go pull out an old Chris Williamson CD and listen to music. Do anything that moves you forward. One thing that occurred to me yesterday, and I mentioned to some people last night, is think of 10 good reasons to be lesbian, gay, bisexual, or transgender. I guarantee you cannot stop at 10.
I love it. So this is sort of a variation on the gratitude list, only
right.
Now it's focused on what are the good things about being here. I, for instance, instantly think that one thing I really love about it is the lack of requirements of adherence to gender roles. That's a wonderful thing about
exactly.
Being queer. So celebrate that today.
Celebrate all kinds of things. when danger is afoot, it's really tempting to focus exclusively on the danger and to really get kind of preoccupied with the danger. That's a normal response, and there are reasons that people are wired to do that. So it's important to actually train yourself to not just look for the danger. I want you to be safe. I want us all to be safe. But it's also important to think about who your allies are, where your sources of help are, and to really notice allies at this point and to talk to allies and to tell them what you want from them. This is a great time to say to an ally, here's what I need from you right now.
Whether that's a hug or a donation to my org, or I need an attorney, can you help me with
that? Or I need to know that you are working against the anti-Muslim sentiment that's getting stirred up around this. I need to know that you're working on social justice issues of various kinds. It doesn't even have to be an LGBT issue, though that's wonderful, of course. But I need my allies to be moving this country toward a better place. And when I see that, and when I know it's happening, it's empowering to me. I think it's also really important at this time to watch what you're taking in about messages about being lesbian, gay, bisexual, or transgender. If you spend too much time online, you'll get a lot of statements about how we deserve it or there's something wrong with us, that kind of thing. It is a really important time to know the facts about what it is to be LGBTQ. It is a really important time to read about our history and to know about the incredible movement and change that we've gone through. One of the most frequent phrases that comes out of, or it's actually a clause that comes out of my mouth is something said long ago by the South African freedom fighter named Stephen Biko, who said the most potent weapon in the hands of the oppressor is the mind of the oppressed. Watch what gets in your head. And I would say by that, do not sit and watch 24-hour news cycle. You will see the repetition of violence over and over and over again. That's not a particularly good thing to take in. Find and use community in all the ways. This is a great time to be involved in community. This is a great time to hang out with other LGBT people and allies and to support one another, to grieve together, and to figure out next steps, including empowering steps.
This is great. If you had 1 minute, which is what you have, to make a final comment, what would you like for our audience especially to take away this evening?
I think the most important thing is the movement perspective. This is just a moment. It is a horrible moment. I have every bit of sympathy and caring for the people in Orlando and all the people who were directly affected by this. And we have got to plug into our need to think in terms of movement, think in terms of going forward, think in terms of never turning back, because then and only then do we lose. If we keep moving forward, if we continue to work for social justice, if we use our own privilege to change things, then we will be fine.
Excellent. I'd like to close with a few lines from a sonnet written by Tony Award-winning actor Lin-Manuel Miranda, whom Glenda mentioned a moment ago. He wrote this after Orlando and delivered it at his awards acceptance speech. We live through times when hate and fear seem stronger. We rise and fall, and light from dying embers, remembrances that hope and love last longer. And love is 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 love, cannot be killed or swept aside.
You've been listening to Outsources on KGNU Boulder, Denver. I'm Sean Kenny, and you've been hearing a 2016 interview between Dr. Janice Bohan and Dr. Glenda Russell following the aftermath of the Pulse nightclub shooting in Orlando. We'd like to close tonight's episode with a brief conversation that I had with Dr. Glenda Russell yesterday to get her perspective on how our current context informs the horrific shooting at Club Q this past weekend. Dr. Glenda Russell, thanks so much for taking a little bit of time today in the aftermath of such horrific events to revisit the episode that you did with Janice Bohan. This was now 6 years ago after the Pulse nightclub shooting. And it's striking how much of what you talked about then is still relevant. I'm curious if you could speak a little to what's different this time. In other words, what do you feel is important to keep in mind about this moment and context as we're thinking about how to care for ourselves, for our communities, as well as mobilize, do something for future action?
Yeah. Well, I think every event occurs in some kind of a context. And the present context has been full of a lot of challenges for an awful lot of people. Broadly speaking, it's been a difficult time in terms of things like economics, our changing understandings of racial injustice and what to do about that, the pandemic and its accompanying uncertainty, and for many, physical isolation, and even fundamental questions about where is democracy going and are we going to, you know, sustain it. By most indicators, there's a fair amount of depression and anxiety going on in the United States. So we're already kind of in not ideal circumstances. More specifically, where it comes to LGBTQ people, the entire community has been the target of anti-queer and especially anti-trans rhetoric and policies forever, but especially so in the last few years. We see it in public discourse about our lives. We see it in local, state and institutional policies and judicial decisions that are meant to constrain our lives. And beneath all of that rhetoric and all of those policies runs a clear message. We are not okay, and we are not safe. Both those broader stresses and the anti-queer and anti-trans messages may leave us in an already disempowered position, and potentially all the more so if we are at the same time members of other marginalized groups. So we need to be especially diligent about using our community, using our history, tapping into the movement perspective, calling upon allies, and taking good care of ourselves and one another. We'll get through this. We'll keep making positive change, but we need to allow ourselves to have our feelings and to move through them. We also need to hold on to one another. And this is, and I think it's really important to remember, this is not primarily a mental health problem. This is a community problem. It's a problem where our queer community and our queer culture will be every bit as helpful as any kind of mental health intervention. We want to do those things that are good for us at all times, you know, sleep, get exercise, don't take too many substances, stuff like that. But we really want to embrace community and embrace one another and take care of one another and ask our allies to step up right now.
We are including a variety of resources on our Outsources show page, which you can access by going to news.kgnu.org and clicking on Outsources under the Shows and Features tab. On tonight's episode page, we'll be including more information and resources from Dr. Glenda Russell on how to care for yourself and your community. If you want to help the Colorado Springs community directly affected by Saturday night's shooting, we've also included links for how you can donate to victims and their families. For now, the Outsources Collective would like to close by saying that wherever you are, we hope you are taking care of yourself and one another. In these moments of unspeakable pain, we need each other. Good night, and we'll see you next week.